Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. That's a little too loud. Sorry about that. This is Peter Paul Verzola, and this is Australia Day. And we're featuring culture, and we'll get this leveled down. Sorry about that. we'll play something to tell you some Australian slang. Here we go.
G'day.
That's Australian, okay? This is called filling in time.
Terms we usually hear, the Australian colloquial English would be g'day, which means good day or good morning. Those of us who are familiar with music and the unofficial national anthem, Waltzing Matilda. A Waltzing Matilda is a swagger or a betting that the old Aussie settlers and ex-convicts, when they wandered through that continent. Australia is a continent, and if you look at it, upside down, it looks like the United States in many respects. And we have quite a history connection to Australia. It took 6 months by ship in the 17th century to reach Australia. Captain Cook and Captain Philip Sidney in Sydney, Australia, in New South Wales is named after Philip Sidney. And what the English used to do, British Parliament, and the government, the parties that were running the country and running Ireland, they would take their convicts and their debtors and the Irish malcontents, because Cromwell had gone into Ireland and conquered it, and he was very brutal, and the Irish never forgave the English for some of the things that they did and all the horrors that they inflicted upon them. But anyway, they were transported initially to the West Indies, and you still see some light-skinned West Indians who have English and Irish and Scottish blood, who are the descendants of people who were indentured servants or slaves or convicts. And then also we have here in the United States, or what was the colonies, we have the Scots, the Irish, who were and indentured servants who were brought over here, and mostly in the mountain countries, mountain states. What are the states today? What's Virginia, the Carolinas, Alabama, all those places. And we still see, we used to joke about kissing cousins, and that there was a lot of intermarriage among those settlers and the families. And so you have these problems, and some of these things are not repeatable. But comes the American Revolution, and of course the British lost, or English lost, the colonies, and so the British had no place to dump their convicts and their malcontents, their debtors. So Australia became the place, and it was a horrible six-month journey. There's a great book out called The Fatal Shore. It's probably the preeminent history of Australia, and I would recommend it to anybody who's interested in the country. It's a fabulous country, and I enjoyed my time down there. There's a lot of culture. We'll get into a little bit in this half hour. And the Aussies have made quite a contribution to the English-speaking world and to culture. In government, for instance, the Aussies were the first ones. They were abused. The convicts were horribly treated. They were they had overseers. They worked on the roads. They were chained, like in a chain gang. They were given 100 lashes on the back was not uncommon. And these guys were repeat offenders, many of them. Surprisingly, in The Fatal Shore, Robert Hughes, the author and the historian, talks about a subject that has become very a sticking point, no pun intended, in American politics, and that is homosexuals. Interesting, in his book, he talks about how the young Irish boys, young Irish youth who were transported took 6 months, again, to come from England and Ireland and out of the jails to New South Wales, which was the first place that the English settled and where they dumped their malcontents and political prisoners. And there's a line in the book where they're complaining about sodomy, and the term for homosexual was called a mully. And the Irish boy was talking to his priest, and he's saying, these things are unknown in Ireland, so I guess we could say that in Australia, the sodomy and homosexuality is an English vice, or was. And, of course, they're quite open about it over there, and very some of them are very active and up-in-your-face. But it's become a problem throughout the world, and not only in the English-speaking world. We hear the term Waltzing Matilda, and we'll play an excerpt on that. Theme. It's the unofficial anthem of national anthem of Australia, and a Waltzing Matilda is bedding. It's a swagger stick. It's a knapsack on the end of a pole, which the guys who were traveling, you know, by foot through Australia into the bush, which is the wild, that was called their Waltzing Matilda. And so that's probably there's some a little controversy about that, but that seems to be the etymological definition, the original one. And then one of our favorites, it was a great rock song during the 70s, Three Dog Night. Now that was a rock group, an Australian rock group, but a Three Dog Night in Australia means that you had to sleep with three dogs in order to stay warm. So that's the origin of that phrase. And then, of course, we have some interesting political contributions. They, because the newly enfranchised Australians, or they were still a colony, or Aussies, there was a lot of intimidation when there was voting. So they were the ones in 1846 that came up with the secret ballot. We didn't, in the United States, didn't come up with the secret ballot until 1892, and then the first federal government election reform was about 1907. Now, there's a term in California in regarding frontier justice. Now, when we had the gold rush here in the late 1800s, 1849, and there's a famous book called The World Rushed In, and everybody came here looking for gold. And there was also a gold rush in Australia. There's a lot of gold there. It's a very wealthy country, a lot of natural resources, great wineries. The only problem is they drive on the wrong side of the road. Excuse me, I'm still getting over a cold, and I had some minor surgery today. But we must carry on, as they say, stiff upper lip, as the Brits say, or the Pommies. That's another term that when the Aussies are angry and the New Zealanders are angry with the British, they call them Pommies. And there's a few other words. And, for instance, they have learned when they come to the States, a fag doesn't mean a homosexual. It means a cigarette. And here in Haight-Ashbury, we used to tell travelers, young travelers who were coming here, especially if they were going around San Francisco, and saying, don't go around offering a fag because some people will take you up on it. So that's one of the expressions. Of course, that's more English than it is Australian. Excuse me. So, yes, here we go. And then in culture, and since we don't have a lot of time, we had some of the greatest opera singers in the world came out of Australia, and those were some big women, big women. The first one was Nellie Melba, great singer back at the turn of the century, and she was one of the first opera singers, especially females, who learned to control her own PR and market herself. She also gave her name to three culinary dishes: peach melba, which is a dessert, a peach sauce, which is a sweet sauce, and then a gratiné, which are ingredients, I guess it's more French. And then she was called the Great Melba, and she refused when she would, at an end of a performance, she would not share the stage with anybody. She would not share her glory. Quite a woman. Then we had in the late 30s and 40s one of the great opera singers, Marjorie Lawrence. And she came out of the bush. She learned to ride a horse, and she won a scholarship to Paris. And she was the toast of France, sang a lot of roles. And she was a remarkable woman. In Mexico in 1940, she was struck with polio. Great Wagnerian singer. And her husband, he was a Christian Scientist, Dr. Thomas, I think Ford was his name. Anyway, there's a famous movie, Interrupted Melody, with Glenn Ford, who plays her husband, and Eleanor Parker, who was his wife in real life, was also a famous dancer, and she's the mother of Peter Ford, who's still living. And Eleanor and Glenn got divorced. But anyway, she was the first opera singer to ride a horse in an opera, and that was Die Gotte Dämmerung at the end of the four and a half hour opera. The horse, Brunhilde, jumps on the horse and rides into the flames, and she actually did this. Then she got struck down with polio. She couldn't go on the stage, so what she had, she went to therapy with, I believe, Sister Kenny, and I'll get into Sister Kenny in a minute. Now, Sister is not a nun or a religious nun. It is a nurse, and the British used that term, the New Zealanders, and I think the Canadians used to. Mostly the Commonwealth countries used that term. But anyway, she came down with polio, and she fought her way back. She did USO stuff during the World War II, entertaining the troops, and she decided to come back on the opera stage, and she decided to re-debut in Tristan and Isolde, which is another four-and-a-half-hour opera. And she did it sitting on a wheelchair. It's never been done before. And she, at the end of the opera, she summons all her strength, and for some reason her limbs became like steel, and she stood up and finished the aria. Then she went to teach. She retired early, and she died, I think, in Little Rock, Arkansas, and the University of Arkansas has her her records and biography and that sort of thing. Excuse me. I'm still getting over this bloody cold. But anyway, now we get to Sister Kenny. Now, Sister, this is interesting. Sister Kenny was an Australian nurse who came up with a swimming method. We heard in sports the Australian crawl, and that supposedly was invented in Australia, and it's the overhand swimming. Anyway, what Sister Kenny, the nurse, decided to do for polio victims, because there was no polio vaccine. Dr. Salk and Dr. Sabin hadn't developed their vaccines back in the 30s and 40s. And remember, FDR also had polio. So what she did was she did develop a physical exercise method to strengthen the children's limbs. She came to Minneapolis, and came to the States, and there's a famous movie with Rosalind Russell called The Sister Kenny Story. She started a nonprofit, a polio cure foundation, and she died and was taken over by a bunch of hustlers. Now, at that time in the late 50s, Walter Mondale was a law student working part-time at the Green Giant. That's the a vegetable processor in Minnesota. And he got a job in the Minnesota Attorney General's office, and he rose to the rank of Deputy Attorney General. The Attorney General got an appointment to the federal bench, and just as the Sister Kenny nonprofit fundraising scandal broke, he became the Attorney General. And he got all the glory and the credit for the work that his predecessor, a guy named Lightning Bolt, Judge Bolt, had done all the work, and but Walter Mondale, or Fritz Mondale, got the glory, and that propelled him into the U.S. Senate, and as Vice President in the Carter administration, and then later as a presidential candidate. Where's the beef? And of course, some people are still asking. Of course, he didn't invent that phrase. Miss Peller did for, I think, one of the hamburger outfits. Now, those of you who like lamb, now let's stick with the food. If you've eaten Australian lamb, New Zealand lamb, and American lamb, a lot of our lamb either comes from California or Colorado. If you notice, all three of these lambs, or this lamb meat, taste different. And, of course, Americans have never learned to eat lamb right. We've had this awful mint jelly. I used to get it when I was in the hospital, the terrible stuff. But the English, and of course, they because of the size of their grazing and their farms, they didn't have big feedlots. The reason that all of these different slices of lamb meat taste different is because how they're fed. Now, the Australians are graze their lamb and their cattle on grass, usually, or that's what they used to do. And, of course, an Australian farmer is called a granger. And it's the chemical and the mineral content of the grass that flavors the sheep or the lamb. The same thing with New Zealand. There's a different composition in the grass and what they feed their animals, and it's the same thing in Colorado. That's why you get three different flavors of the different lamps. And it's an interesting expression, another word that you don't hear too much. What is it? A sausage is something you don't want to get involved in. When I was over there, somebody pulled a meat sausage trick on me, and I was kind of suspicious. And it turned out it was kangaroo meat, and I was really annoyed. Kangaroo meat is very doesn't have fat because of the kangaroos are quite athletic, and they exercise a lot, and you don't want to get in the way of their tail. I went out to a kangaroo refuge, and I got too close to a mother, and the baby is in a pouch, and it's called a joey. And it's a marsupial. It's very interesting. The farmers or the grangers in Australia are very unhappy with kangaroos because what they do, they'll go through a field of grain and they'll eat the buds off the top and destroy the crop. And so there's this constant battle with the farmers and the conservationists and the animal rights people over kangaroos and the predatory. And incidentally, koala bears, they don't have fleas. They do have ticks. I learned that the hard way. And then the dingo dog is now making its appearance in the last 20 years here in the United States. And, of course, the Australian sheepdogs, we're seeing more and more of them. Great animals, even when I was out there. I'm going to play another piece of music. Here we go. Now, this we haven't talked about the Aboriginals. Those are the original people, and there is still a lot of racism in Australia was imposed on the native peoples. And here is an instrument which you probably won't hear much of, or if at all. It's called the digeridoo. That's a five-minute piece, but I think a minute and a half is enough of that if you don't understand the chords. Now, they blow into those. If you've seen some of the Aboriginals, they blow into those, and there's no chords. And those of you who don't understand music, it's I guess it's native ability, no pun intended. One of the interesting things, Australia had a prime minister. He was a very handsome man in the 60s, about 1967. He had three gorgeous daughters-in-laws. He was only in office a year. What happened? His name was Harold Holt, and he is the only prime minister or head of a country who has disappeared. And in 1967, he was prime minister for a year. He was supposed to have gone skin diving, and he was never seen again. And there's a lot of some people thought he was a communist spy abducted by the Chinese because Australia was thinking of pulling out the Vietnam War. They did send contingents of troops and volunteers to Vietnam. And one of these days, I'll try to get one of these Aussies to talk about how they tried to flush the Viet Cong out of the caves. But anyway, he disappeared, and there's no one in modern history who was a world leader has had this mystery surrounding him, even to this day, 43 years later. He's given his name. He's the only prime minister, only politician who's given his name to the English language to bolt, to do a Harold Holt means to bolt or to disappear. It's an arcane term. You don't hear too much, but we might hear more about it because I understand a prominent American political manipulator, politician, has disappeared, and we don't have the story late breaking from my sources, and so I'm not going to mention his name at this point. But anyway, Harold Holt was very interesting, and it's one of those Cold War mysteries that I guess John le Carré couldn't write about. Another thing that among the actors, Mel Gibson, you think of him as an Australian actor, but he was born in upstate New York. When he was about 10 years old, the family moved to Australia. And, of course, he's very conservative Catholic, and he's been in some brawls and that sort of thing lately, and a lot of controversy about a couple of the films. But he's best remembered for Gallipoli, and we'll get into that when Gallipoli Day comes around in April. I have some material which we will put up, we will rebroadcast, that was done for Western Public Radio when I was there. Excuse me. And then, what else are we seeing here? Yes, I would recommend The Fatal Shore for people who are interested. And if you get a chance to travel, by all means, they have some of the best wineries in the world. I drank my way from Sydney to Perth, which is on the Western Australia, which is like 3,000 plus miles across the country. And everywhere I was in Adelaide, and that's Southeast Australia. What had happened was their wineries were started by Germans and Italians who moved down there in the late 19th century, and we're seeing a lot of their wines, they're becoming competitive in price, which are being exported here to the United States and being exported in bulk. And that, and if you buy wine in a box, you can thank the Aussies. They invented that. And there's another a culinary thing that's coming in the United States, and you have to acquire a taste for it. It's called Vegemite, and Vegemite is a it's like a spread, but it's a yeast spread, and I can assure you, I had it for breakfast over there, and it is an acquired taste. But it's supposed to help you ward off fleas and flies and all that. That's one of these folk medicine myths that I heard when I was over there. I'm not quite sure that's true, because I was around a koala bear, and a tick jumped on me. Excuse me, I'm still trying to get over this bloody cold. What else can we talk about in this brief 7 minutes? The music, the Aussies are, it's interesting. I thought when I went over there that I would like New Zealand more because of the Maoris, and because the Maoris are also an Asian people, and they're treated differently than the Aboriginals in Australia. It's interesting. As Australia developed and became part of the Commonwealth and got freer and freer of the English yoke, it wasn't until recently that they decided they're no longer pay homage to the Queen of England and the British royal family. But they were a white-only country. Asians were excluded. And this was the heyday of this, or this ended at when Sir Robert Menzies was the longest-serving Australian Prime Minister. When he died or went out of office, and then it was the Vietnam War that probably with the refugees that Australia accepted some, and it was really funny when I was over there to see a Chinese kid wearing these in an English upper class school garb, a uniform, and speaking Australian, and here I'm looking at him and he's Chinese, Chinese Asian. It was quite different. Also, today is General MacArthur's birthday, and those of you who know World War II history remember when FDR, whose birthday was yesterday, when he ordered him to leave Bataan Corregidor. MacArthur claimed that he didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay with his troops. And a lot of people think he deserted him. He went by submarine to Australia. But that was the beginning of the relationship, the special relationship that the Aussies have politically with us, the U.S., the Americans. And I think we're their favored people instead of the English for a lot of reasons. The culture, we're more outgoing and know how to get things done. And the Aussies are very good at that. The only problem is I wish they'd learn how to drive on the right side of the road. Among the other things we should, you might be interested in Australia, the kangaroo on the tail on Qantas. They have National Airline. When I was over there, was ANSET, the internal airline. There were two airlines, and Qantas. They had these great big stewardesses who looked like they had been handling sheep. And I tell you, I went to a sheep farm, and I saw these women handling these big sheeps and these ewes, and I guess that's where they got their muscles. Very funny to listen to them, and they don't take any guff. Great people. I highly recommend that you visit if you get the opportunity. Oh, yeah, here it is. A motley bag. That's a sausage because people don't know what's in it. That's another Australian colloquialism, which you probably won't hear, but you heard it here. And I think we're going to end with a couple of I did all this music today. Oh, yes, here we go. That's Waltzing Matilda. It's just an excerpt. That's their unofficial national anthem. Their official anthem is Onward Australia Fair, and I don't know what that means. But it's interesting. When the Australians travel, because it's so far, and I was told this when I was working with the Haight-Ashbury switchboard, we'd see a lot of Aussies and New Zealanders. The students and the youth, they would travel for 6 months to a year because it was so far and so expensive. They're equal to us as travelers. They want to see as much of the world as early as they can and as soon as they can. And they're great people, And then I forget about the Irish. You know, the Irish used to be that for modern day Australian, and they're now doing this what I call Australian Shintoism, ancestor search and worship. Used to be if you had you found out that some of your ancestors had been transported as either political prisoners, indentured servants, or convicts or debtors. You didn't want to talk about that, and a lot of families, even on this shore, on our shores, don't want to talk about some skeletons or what they think are skeletons or want to discover skeletons that may be in their closet. But anyway, there's a burgeoning movement in Australia to find out who your ancestors were, and it turns out now that the people who have ancestors who were transported, this is a mark of honor. This is ethnic respect, ethnic heritage. So it's interesting how these things turned around. And I'd recommend the movie Ned Kelly. That's the best thing that Mick Jagger ever did. Straight drama. He did that other film performance, which was a dog, no pun intended. And it gets into how the Irish were abused by the English cops. And Ned Kelly and his brother, I think it was, decided he was the first guy to invent an armored suit. So when the English cops were shooting at him, the bullets wouldn't penetrate. But they finally caught him, and he was hanged. But he's still to this day a folk hero in Australia. And it was like Jesse James. A lot of the outlaws in the South and after that period were people whose families or who themselves had been abused by the power elite. So things don't change. It's just the geography and where these things had happened. And we're going to end with a nice finale. I think this is a lovely song which typifies Australia. Sorry about that. Recording was done live. We did it live out in Australia, and there have been some problems. So sorry about the distortion. Anyway, stay tuned Thursday at this time, 5:30. We'll have Jim Gleason, professor and art expert, and he'll talk about art and about tagging. And what's your... what's the difference between, what's the line between art and pornography? As a U.S. Supreme Court judge says, I know what it is when I see it, but I can't describe it. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Thank you for tuning in.